You're listening to Spice Radio, and today we are joined by two guests. One is Derek Gladwin, who is an author and assistant professor in the Faculty of Education at the University of British Columbia, and Paul Harris, who served as a municipal councillor for 7 years and worked with the Federation of Canadian Municipalities. They wrote a piece called Politicians Aren't Solely to Blame for Nasty Election Discourse. Derek and Paul, thank you for joining us today.
I'm happy to be here.
Thank you. So, Paul, I wanted to start with you as somebody who has experience in politics. So back in 2015, you were the NDP candidate for the Red Deer Mountain View riding. I mean, what was your experience back then in politics? Do you think things have really shifted in the last 4 years?
I probably shifted a little bit in politics because of the discourse that's happening in the United States and other parts of the world. Perhaps it's become a little bit nastier, which is why we think we're thinking about how we can shift the dialogue back to a more civil discourse.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, for a lot of Canadians in this election, and Derek, I'll ask you this question, they really wanted to focus on policy, and instead there was a lot of name-calling. How did this happen, and how can we shift this?
Well, it's a great question, and, you know, that's a large part of why we felt motivated to write something publicly about this election, because as it began, and even before the election began, we started seeing more and more rhetoric that was, you know, built around war rooms and traitors and fraudsters and all the kinds of terms that you don't necessarily, you wouldn't use with people that you govern collectively with, whether you're a party in power or not. So I think that's been building for a while. As Paul said, it's certainly coming from the South significantly in the U.S. But how we, you know, what we do, how we engage with this is, I think, as citizens, we're part of the collaborative governance, and we're responsible, too, for what we want out of our politicians and the way in which we want to frame and shape the language and the discourse we use. So that's why we said politicians aren't only to blame. In many ways, we have to rise up to a different kind of civil discourse again and realize that we do want the same policies. We do want to come together, and whoever governs, whether it's a minority or a majority government, that ultimately Parliament has to work together.
Mm-hmm. And one thing I wanted to ask, and I'll put this question to Paul first, is you do guys say that, so politicians aren't solely to blame. So how can we, as people, sort of change the rhetoric and remove the negativity out of politics? What power do we have?
Well, one of the easiest ways to think about it, I think, is to the phrase, words create worlds. And so it means that we need to become aware of the kind of language that we're using and what that creates as we speak with our neighbors and our friends and our politicians, our family. You can imagine that if you say something as simple to your partner as, I'm angry, how the conversation will unfold after that, as opposed to, I'm curious, or tell me more about that. So a lot of this has to do, I think, with the way we frame any discussion in our lives. So for us as citizens, it's important that we step back and take a moment to think about what language we're using and what it's going to create, what will unfold as a result of the words that we pick. So, you know, you think about some of the framing in the media, particularly this last election, we can't get away from words like war room, battleground, Red Deer, those kinds of things, which immediately set oppositions up, rather than thinking about something like, we could use the example in the U.S. right now, if we would have said they're going through their primaries shortly, could they call that the primary dialogues, for example? What would happen if we started to think about the campaigns rather than campaigns as the Alberta dialogue or the Conservative dialogue? How would we think differently about what we're saying to the media, what we're saying to one another, so that the future changes as a result of the words that we pick.
Mm-hmm. Now, I'll throw this out to both of you, but what have you noticed over the years, especially when we talk about social media, the rise of, you know, the language that we see online, the kind of negativity that's also spreading? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I can just say a small part of that is, one of the subjects that I teach and write on at the University of British Columbia is digital media literacy. And what that sort of entails is that, you know, we all as citizens use digital media. And we have a responsibility to understand what that means and how it functions. And media and digital media and social media are just tools at the end of the day. And how those tools are being used, again, goes back to what Paul was saying about the language in which we're using. And a part of that is misinformation and disinformation that we, you know, as citizens need to be aware of and need to have a sense of what is being put out there as truth and what is not. So that is some work on our end as well, not to just believe whatever we see. But if what we're seeing is disinformation and misinformation in the social media is reflecting what certain politicians are saying themselves, then it's even more difficult to discern between the disinformation and misinformation that might be coming from, you know, external sources as opposed to from the actual campaigns. So that, again, that goes back to how is language being used and what kind of worlds are we being created through the language in which we're using on social media.
Mm-hmm. One quote, one line that you wrote that I found very interesting. You guys wrote, "It's time to focus on the issues of the future together, to allow candidates to be human, to make mistakes, to apologize, to learn, and to grow." And in this last federal election, you know, we saw a lot of people's past being dug up and people really sort of lashing out and saying, "Oh, this candidate has got to go," and not a lot of forgiveness. I mean, can we somehow get past this? Can we be a little bit more understanding? And Derek or Paul, either of you can take this question.
Well, I think so. I think part of that is that we need to just hold the mirror up for ourselves and think about the last time we were perfect or the last time that we did something wrong and how we feel about it. Everybody is human, and what is important is that we, in governance like this, we look around our communities. We choose one from among us to represent us, and then we need to continue to support them, whoever we choose, so that the dialogue continues. So that means that they're going to make mistakes. They're going to do things that we don't agree with. They need to hear from us. They need to be in relationship to us, and they need to be able to apologize for the things that are wrong and then learn from them and carry on. That's how we all work in life. It's crazy to think that we can all be perfect right out of the womb, right till we become an elected official, you know, that we're never going to make any mistakes.
Mm-hmm. Do you think also part of it, and maybe Derek, I'll throw this on to you, is there's also a lot of this idea called like the cancel culture where, you know, instantly something comes up and they're judged for that mistake. I mean, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I do think that we are in a culture, a cancel culture, other types of media cultures where there is a court of social media that's been created. And in many ways, they're responding to legitimate concerns in society that need to be dealt with. Absolutely. But on the other hand, there's a way in which, as Paul was saying, we are calling people out for certain actions and certain ways about past, sort of without understanding that being a human is an evolutionary process, and there is a process there. So, you know, in terms of politicians, I would hope and want to see a future where we allow our elected officials, we allow people in positions of power to be able to make mistakes. The question is, how do they deal with those mistakes? How do they talk about them publicly? How do they acknowledge it? And what type of language are they using around that? I think that's the part that's the important focus. And if they're not doing those things, then we do need to hold them further accountable and maybe ask for their removal. But otherwise, I think it's important to, allow people to be people on some level, and I think that would create more civil discourse in politics in general.
Mm-hmm. Another thing I wanted to ask you too is, you guys mentioned we need to adopt more of a relational approach. What do you mean by this? And I'll throw this question to Paul.
Well, for me, and I think for many people, we look at the relationships that we've built throughout the campaign with our elected officials, our current elected officials, and then I have a personal experience in that what happens after the election is that your campaign team disappears. Everybody goes back to their jobs, their 9-to-5, and they leave you alone. And so what becomes the most important thing to do is to continue the relationship you have with your elected officials, whoever they are, and with whichever party they are, so that they're supported in their role and can continue to support the communities from which they come. So today, citizens can get right out there, find out who their elected officials are, find out what social media accounts they have, connect with them, know their phone number, keep them on speed dial, know where their office is, because
they need to be able to speak up as the future unfolds, whether they're doing something right or whether they're doing something wrong. And I tell you, it goes miles if a citizen phones an elected official and just says, hey, I'm not calling for any reason particularly, except I noticed that you continue to work hard for us, and I really appreciate it. The next time that something doesn't go quite right, that person can also phone and say, hey, did you think about this and this and this as you work through the conversations? Perhaps there's a better way. If you don't carry on those relationships with your elected officials, there's no possible way that we'll have a collaborative governance model in Canada. We've got to maintain relationships with those from among us who we've elected.
Mm-hmm. Now, if this type of negative discourse in politics continued to take place, what negative effect would that keep on having in our democracy?
Besides high blood pressure?
Besides high blood pressure, yeah.
Well, democracies are certainly built upon the people, right? And the people and citizens aren't engaged, we don't have a democracy. So that is always the worst-case scenario if these kinds of dialogues get out of control. I don't think that's going to happen. I'm more optimistic that I feel like we go through pendulum shift, mm-hmm. and we're in a particularly far pendulum, you know, in terms of how we're engaging. But I, you know, one thing that was very encouraging throughout this election here in Canada, and actually you could even say this, I think, generally around the world where we're seeing more of these kinds of campaigns, is that the people and the citizens don't really want this. I mean, the general population mm-hmm. are not thrilled with this, and they're having resistance to it. So in many ways, I think that's going to be a shift in this, to build on what Paul was saying, you know, in order to change that culture, it's our responsibility to keep engaged, to stay engaged, to not only communicate with our politicians, but also get engaged on the community level, you know, the small p politics of our lives, and to volunteer and spend time doing things with community groups that matter to us. And that collective sort of grassroots level is going to change the culture above. And again, they're going to speak more to that if that's the predominant attitude of their constituents.
Mm-hmm. Now, Derek and Paul, what type of reaction have you received from this op-ed?
I think for the most part, it's been quite positive. It was picked up at a number of papers across the country, which we appreciate, and certainly having our conversation today is worthwhile as well. We've got feedback from colleagues, or I certainly have, saying how much they appreciate mm-hmm. hearing somebody call attention to the way we interact with one another and perhaps bring back a civil discourse. Mm-hmm. And it's always good to remind people that we're part of the government. We're not separate and other from them. So what we do in our lives and how we interact, how the media interacts with us and how we interact with the politicians, etc., all creates that culture. And we have this strong Canadian value of being helpful for one another, and it's odd when we don't see it in our politics mm-hmm. because it seems almost unusual for Canadians to behave the way they do during campaigns like this.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's probably one of the things we need to reflect on now that the campaigns are over and the elected officials are in Ottawa. How do we continue to shift the dialogue back to a more civil discourse where we can actually produce some of the results that we want as Canadians, no matter which part of the spectrum we're on.
All right, Derek and Paul, thank you so much for your time. Is there anything else you'd like to add before we let you go?
I'll be real quick. I would say one thing we need to pay attention to is our participation. And then sometimes when everything is going well in our lives, or, you know, we have a comfortable quality of life and everything seems okay, we participate less in our governance model because things are ticking along. I think that's probably the time where we need to participate more. It's not always going to be that way. How can we continue to support what's going right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we want to thank you both. We know that it's not easy talking on the same line, but we appreciate you doing that for us. And we hope to talk to you very soon.
Okay, thanks for having us.
Thanks for the call.
Thank you.